freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
You want to go to the Seahawks game? All right, give me one more screen.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
I would put very little stock in what Brock Beard has to say.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app.
Salk, the third time in 2 days, is flat out wrong.
And 710sports.com.
Hey, good morning, everybody. It is Brock and Salk. What's up? Hope you're having a good morning here on 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com. Danny O'Neill is in for Brock today. Hey, dude.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great, and I'm happy you're in. Lots to discuss. We were both out at Seahawks camp yesterday, and a lot coming out of that. In addition to some of the fireworks that took place at the podium after the practice itself was pretty darn interesting.
You begin to realize not just some of what you're going to see, but some of the questions you have. I've got a lot of uncertainty about this team. I think that there is a bigger question about this franchise at any point since the 2011 season. And 2012, you had a quarterback question, but everything else was pretty much sorted out. Everything else about that team was pretty much sorted out in 2012 when you got Matt Flynn and Russell Wilson and Tavares Jackson. And I imagined it being like a convention where you would have different delegations there cheering for, not delegations, how G. Scott
No,
said.
We used to talk about that. Brock and I did a whole thing about how you would have like different camps.
Yeah, you would
up
have had
on the berm.
The tea party.
Yes.
For Tavares Jackson would have been like, they're all dressed in colonial attire as the tea partiers.
Of course.
Russell would have been unlimited seating.
Obviously.
Unlimited.
That's banned from this show.
Really?
Yeah.
You're not amused by it?
No.
Russell made a joke yesterday.
Yeah.
Russell made an honest attempt at self-effacing humor yesterday when
unlimited.
Asked. It's really hard for me. I'm sorry. I
when
really
asked by Jim Moore about unlimited.
I heard that.
And he made a joke.
Yeah, he sort of made fun of himself.
The RDub 3000 has had a computer chip upgrade.
To be fair, every teammate had already taken a shot at him, including guys who aren't going to make the team, like Mike Davis, who kind of walked by and were like, what's up, unlimited? Like, yeah, I don't think that's gone
He's
over
got
particularly
unlimited
well.
Unlimited media.
This is ridiculous.
That's the part that
I exactly
like.
What he said?
That was Mike Davis. Yeah.
I enjoy the fact that he's done something that gives people an opportunity to rip.
So what is the question? What is the question about this team?
What's their personality? What is this team's personality? They had a very distinct personality beginning really 2012.
Yeah.
Was solidified. That game against Green Bay, that this was a team that was going to try to run over you. And then tell you how they ran over you.
That's interesting. That game, and then the other one that jumps out from that year is probably the Chicago game, where it also became about what Russell. That was sort of Russell's emergence, I guess you would say. At the end of the game, I'm going to run read option over and over again, and just work our way down the field. Right.
That's when they found their closer. Right.
Yes.
That's when all of a sudden, and you've got the closer. You've
yes.
got the guy and play his music, and it's time to win it.
Yep.
But their personality, because Russell's never been their personality. Russell's
Thank
been
God.
A huge difference maker and a really important piece of it, but he's never been this team's personality when they went to back-to-back Super Bowls and five straight playoff appearances was, we're going to tell you that we're going to run over you, then we're going to run over you, and then we're going to explain to you how we ran over you.
That's Marshawn Lynch.
Absolutely.
Marshawn Lynch had more to do with the personality of this team than anyone. And if you look at the dynastic teams, and I'm using that word in a much looser context, but the teams that have had been good enough to have a personality over the last decade or so, you know, the Patriots are Bill Belichick's personality more so than Tom Brady's, although it's a little bit of both. The Colts and then later the Broncos were Peyton Manning's personality, I think you would say. The Packers, I think, are very much Aaron Rodgers' personality.
Then think about it, too. The 49ers, they were Joe Montana cool.
Yes. Pittsburgh before, yeah, they were absolutely Joe Montana cool. Pittsburgh before Ben Roethlisberger was Jerome Bettis' personality. Yeah, I mean, like, there are different players. They don't have to be quarterbacks. Sometimes it's a coach. Sometimes it's the player. Sometimes it's a quarterback. Sometimes it's a running back who can really, or defense that can really lead that personality.
Who do you think Jimmy Johnson's Cowboys personality was? That was a whole lot of Michael Irvin there.
That's what I would have said.
With the big, like, shoulder to floor fur coats
yeah.
and the White House and all of those
I would
those
say
things.
That's more Michael Irvin than anybody.
It's interesting. Each team does develop a personality. And Seattle's personality is undergoing a change, and I don't know what they're going to look like.
I'm with you, and I don't think it's going to be Russell. I mean, that doesn't make a lot of sense. I don't think he's got enough charisma to pull that off. Doug Baldwin becomes sort of your next most tenured guy, and we'll get to him and what he had to say coming up here at 7:30.
Doug's a statesman, though.
It's not going to be Doug.
Doug's a statesman, and he's the guy, and he's fiery and emotional on the sidelines, but he's not the personality of your team.
And without Mike Bennett, who I think had taken over that mantle from Marshawn Lynch the last few years, and by the way, that may be some of the reason this team has regressed a little bit, is that they were developing more of his personality as opposed to Marshawn's, and throw Sherman in there, and those guys are gone. You're right. There is no natural place. It looked for a moment last year like some of the personality of this team might start to develop out of the tight end room. Honestly, with Nick Vinette and Luke Wilson and Jimmy Graham and those guys hopping up and down and jumping in a box and playing the flute and techno. And I don't know that those guys were good enough or important enough on the team for it to truly become the personality of the team. But I think we all kind of looked at it and were like, oh, this is fresh and new and different.
And maybe showed up with these on one day. I thought they were great.
Maybe this can be the personality of this team.
He sounds so much like Spicoli.
I know. Do you have candidates?
Do I have candidates? No, I don't, because I don't know what Delano Hill's like. I don't know what Tedrick Thompson's like. I don't know what Barkevious Mingo's going
to
be like.
Are they going to play enough to even factor into that? I don't think we know that either.
Those are part of the players that I think. Justin Britt is a leader on the offensive side.
Can I throw you a couple names that I'm curious about? And I know you know these guys much better, both because of your time spent as a reporter, but also because you guys interview them every day, essentially, on Danny, Dave, and Moore, and you guys have had a chance to really get to know them all. Could Dwayne Brown play a big role in that? Brock speaks often about, and so does G, about what kind of a leader and what kind of a presence, what kind of a man's man Dwayne Brown is. Could he play a role in setting some of that tone and personality?
In the offensive line room, yes. The offensive linemen are typically one of the more clustered groups. The 2005, the Seahawks had the best offensive line in the league, and their offensive line still stood kind of a piece apart. The biggest part of the personality of that team was Lofa Tatupu, who was a rookie at that point. Generally, offensive line is a pretty close-knit but a tighter circle. Can he be a leader on this team? Yes, absolutely.
But not necessarily the personality.
Right.
How about Bobby Wagner?
Bobby can be. And I think you saw Bobby taking steps toward that when he was on with you guys earlier this week and talking about Earl Thomas and the importance. And Bobby's a really, really good player.
And a really good leader. And I think I saw him yesterday sort of first over to the bags and working with the coaches. Okay, here's what we're going to do. And then kind of translating it to the rest of the team. His personality, I mean, he's the Ninja Turtle guy. He's got kind of a little funny sense of humor to him. A little biting even at times, but could he be the personality of this team?
It depends on how other guys respond to it. And I think that that's as much a question of this about the individual's personality as how do the guys around him respond to it. You say Marshawn Lynch is the personality, and that's true. Probably number two in terms of personality of this team was Cam Chancellor. Mm. And Cam Chancellor and the way he played and the fact that he would fold up an offensive lineman and then go and line up very stoically and prepare to do it again. So it's the impact that it has on the guys around you. Could Bobby? Yeah, Bobby absolutely thumps people. But usually when you've got a team that responds the personality of the way the entire team plays, it's either sort of the composure that a specific player has, usually the quarterback, or it's the absolutely menacing physical play that's there.
Could the Griffins be a big part of this?
Absolutely.
I mean, and it's a really different type of personality. It's hard to imagine a fifth-round pick immediately asserting himself. However, could the extra try-hard energizer bunny become the new normal for the Seahawks?
Absolutely.
That would be a really great thing.
And watching the connection that those two have, and if you've seen anything between them and by watching both of them play, it's the sort of unabated enthusiasm that they have.
Well, and you watch some of those guys yesterday. I saw some of that from Chris Carson. I saw some of that from Rashad Penny. I saw some of that from, you know, a few. KJ can play like that sometimes. Just a real happiness to be out there on the field.
You see, and maybe that's the most exciting thing about yesterday's practice, is your imagination gets room to start kind of running a little bit. We wonder about the running backs. Do you notice all the running backs had a green sweat towel that they were wearing tucked into the back of their pants? I don't know what the story about that is, but those are the little things that start to develop. Guys having a bit of an identity, and you're like, oh, well, let's see where this goes, because that's something new and something different.
Quarterbacks all came off barefoot and walking on the nice grass there at the facility. I mean, like,
yeah, I'm not into that stuff.
You don't like the barefoot?
No, because it's...
Weren't you barefoot like yesterday?
No, there was a lot of people barefoot.
Yeah, it's important.
It's this whole thing they're talking about grounding. I don't know if it's some hippie influence. Oh. Schneider was doing it a year ago where I was like, why are you walking around barefoot? And he's like, I'm grounding myself.
710, time for Need to Know.
Need to Know. The voice of Seattle sports.
Brought to you by VenueKings.com.
Here's what you need to know up first.
Well, the Seahawks held their first open OTA yesterday. That's an organized team activity. A few guys were not there. Obviously, Earl Thomas still did not show up. Frank Clark, Byron Maxwell, both seem to be skipping it. Here's the number one thing I took away from practice, is that that's what it was. Practice. A real, legitimate practice. And anybody out there who thinks these are just voluntary and attendance is irrelevant, honestly, I know I've been trying to convince you for over a year that this is important. If you were out there watching, I think you might have changed your mind. I don't think there's anything I could say that would have been more powerful than you just watching what the Seahawks did yesterday, because it wasn't a couple guys lifting. It wasn't talking about the plays or running them against air. It was a practice with coaches organizing everything they did and running through all of their plays and scrimmaging. You cannot tell me that every single player on this team wouldn't have benefited from full attendance. You can't tell me that.
It's not just the guys that missed it, that weren't able to gain what was there. It's the effect that those guys have on the players and the younger players around them. And look, the absences mean opportunities. A couple guys that weren't there, I didn't see Frank Clark, did not see Byron Maxwell, obviously did not see Earl Thomas. I also look at it and say that for guys like Clark, who's entering the final year of his rookie deal, or Thomas, who's entering the final year of his contract, that I can understand the business perspective of a player saying, hey, I'm at a point where I'd like to be extended, and if I don't get a contract extension, I'm not going to go full participation in all of the extra flair that's involved with it. That's one of the only things of leverage that you can apply. But you're right, Mike. It is. It's missing, and it's not contributing. It would be more beneficial to everyone if those guys were there.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, if there was a regular practice on the field, everything that took place afterwards seemed to be more about society than about football. Whether it was Russell Wilson, Doug Baldwin, or Pete Carroll answering questions to the media, all three answered seemed just as many about what was going on off the field as what's going on it. Russell Wilson spoke about the new policy on the anthem. Doug Baldwin then called President Trump an idiot, plain and simple. We'll address here in a few minutes. And then Pete Carroll answered questions about Jordan Peterson, the somewhat polarizing psychologist who was in a week or two ago, and Pete tweeted out a picture of him. I'll just say this, and I'll say it again. I think a lot of this could have been avoided if the NFL had spoken to the players, and we'll dig into this in a little bit more detail here at 7:30, but of all of the problems that have now going to make themselves bigger because of this, I think they could have been avoided by better communication, as is often true in life.
Doug Baldwin, if he wants it, has a great future as a social leader. Like, I have no doubts about that. I think yesterday is going to end up being a growing experience for him as he let his emotions and feelings over not just the national anthem regulations that the NFL had passed, but the president's reaction to him. Let that get him to the point where he resorted to name calling. And look, I'm not going to be holier than thou. I call people names all the time. But I think we can all agree that it's better to have a dialogue without that, let alone having the President of the United States involved, and that Doug's point was muted. He will learn to be a more effective leader by learning to take that out of... Talk about the ideas. Talk about the significance. Don't call names.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, Mariners dropped one on the road yesterday, but they'll return home for now a 10-game homestand through this weekend against the Twins. James Paxton will take the mound tonight, looking to keep his own personal hot streak alive. Felix Hernandez was really, really good after a terrible first inning yesterday, and unfortunately, the four runs he gave up in the first was all Oakland would need. Mariners battled back, made it close, scoring three throughout the game, but unfortunately dropped the finale there. So they're one game closer to getting D. Gordon back. Let's just say that.
This team always gives itself a chance, and there was a big part of me that realized that and thought that they were going to come back. And even when they had runners first and second, and Mitch Haniger almost grounds into a triple play in the top of the eighth, well, Kyle Seager ended up lining down. It's a gritty, gutty team. They've got Teddy KGB's alligator blood. And say what you want about Felix, and he was awful in the first inning. And I don't know whether we need to convince him that the second inning is actually starting with the first or what you need to do, but the Mariners give themselves a chance, and it's a fun team to watch with a lot of competitive spark. And think about all the guys they were missing, and they came up 90 feet short of potentially forcing a sweep of the A's.
Yeah, so we'll see. They get back to it tonight. 10-game homestand. That's what you like to see. All right, those are three things you need to know. Every single day, we do that right at 7:10. 7:10 start, by the way, tonight. Pre-game show will be at 6 o'clock here on 7:10 ESPN Seattle. All right, there's a lot from today, Danny, or a lot from yesterday. We're going to have to go through all of these observations and takeaways. There was a million little things that you could pick up at practice yesterday. Only half of mine are body image things. Okay?
Well, that's good. Is that in honor of me?
Yeah, only half. I cut it in half. I mean, it would have been like 100% if Brock were here. But without him and with you in, it's like half or about.
You're only going to
talk
about one of Chris Carson's biceps, not both.
No, it's his shoulders. It's like the area between his tricep and his shoulder is so cut that if I looked like him, I would actually wear a tank top. I mean, maybe not, but probably. In the meantime, let's talk to the professor.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Song.
If you want to take care of him, take care of him now. The price is only going to go up.
Brought to you by Divorce Lawyers from N.com.
He's too important to let go. You're not trying to totally break everything down.
Plus, a wild card.
What magic trick would you like to be able to perform?
I can maybe try to have you disappear. That could be nice.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Song.
Good morning, John.
Good morning.
So we were all out there yesterday to watch practice. I know I have my group of guys, but name three players that, and I hate this football word, flashed to you yesterday.
Russell Wilson moving around, throwing very accurately. I think certainly Chris Carson with his speed, being able to really run, thought that looked really good. And then I guess if you look for the third, I don't know if I saw anything great on defense. I saw a couple quick rushes by Barkevious Mingo. So thought he did some good things. And certainly I thought Shaquille Griffin looked pretty natural over at left cornerback.
That was really fun to see Shaquille moving over there. And then you got the question of who's going to be on the right side. Byron Maxwell wasn't there yesterday. But, man, you got Nico Thorpe, who has retained the short shorts.
Mm-hmm. And made a really nice play, by the way, at the goal line where he kind of ran. It looked almost like he ran the route with the wide receiver, knocked the ball away.
And then you've also got Justin Coleman out there, who they flat out stole from the Patriots. And then is it Deontay Johnson, the kid that they picked up from?
Johnson.
And Trey Flowers was out there. And then
Deontay got banged up a little bit. He had to kind of go into locker room for something.
Back from the dead is the kid who got hurt last year, DeAndre Elliott, who I know they like a lot. How good can the secondary be, John?
Well, it can be good. It's certainly not going to be, I don't think, as good as it has been because it doesn't have Richard Sherman, but I think it can be good. I think that you can see that, you saw good things in the final seven games last year when you had Byron Maxwell and Shaquille Griffin out there when Richard Sherman was gone. I mean, it was a very passable defense. They allowed less than 60% completion and held teams under pretty much, I think, 200 yards passing. So it still can be good. You know, one concern is, I mean, when you look out there and you did the pass rush, particularly with Frank Clark kind of doing the voluntary and not being there, that pass rush looks a little bit thin. But, overall, I still think they can be pretty good.
Here's the funny thing. So I came in this morning and I told Mike, I was like, well, it was interesting to see that you had Bradley McDougald kind of lining up at free safety in the back and then Delano Hill playing strong safety. And Mike's like, well, that's interesting because later on in the practice, I saw McDougald at strong and Tedrick Thompson playing free. It sounds like they were kind of working through a different number of different combinations there in the backfield.
Well, John, you get the answer to that today because Bradley McDougal will join us on the show. Oh. And I think the idea is that in some ways he wanted that. He wanted the ability to kind of, get some snaps at free safety just to try to, continue to grow his game, not fall behind as far as that goes. So I think this is, in part kind of a dual thing. The coaches wanted it and Bradley wanted it.
John, Danny came in today with a really good question, which is who will be and what will be the personality of this Seahawks team moving forward? If it was Marshawn for a few years and then maybe Mike Bennett kind of took over as the person who most was emblematic of their personality, Who do you see has the best shot to do that now moving forward?
Well, I would have to think. I mean, you're starting to see it, certainly, and you had the interview with Bobby Wagner. I think it's going to be Bobby Wagner, K.J. Wright, as showing some of the leadership on defense. And that personality, you know, which is so different than what you've seen with Cam Chancellor and Richard Sherman and all those guys. So that'll be a little bit different. And I think on offense, you know, it will be Russell Wilson and the running game. You know, Russell Wilson, I think you can see. So, you know, it goes from kind of being a tense, kind of wild type of alpha male type thing to now, you know, these guys are all kind of positive. Bobby Wagner's positive. K.J. Wright's positive. You know how positive Russell Wilson is. So that's going to be a little bit of a different vibe.
I wonder if how the Griffins kind of fit into that.
Well, I think they're pretty positive, too. I mean, they're kind of easygoing, I think. You can see they play hard and all that. I think you can see a great confidence. I know in the case of Bradley McDougal, there's so much more confidence coming out of his mouth right now. I think you probably get the same thing out of Shaquille Griffin.
John, we got our first glimpse of what the Seahawks are thinking on the offensive line. Dwayne Brown, left tackle. Ethan Posick, left guard. Justin Britt, of course, at center. Jordan Roos was at right guard yesterday. Now DJ Fluker's still kind of banged up and coming back. And then there were moments where you saw Willie Beavers playing at right tackle. And I don't want to read too much into it. We're way previous. It's too soon to start sketching out a depth chart. But should I be wondering about Jermaine Ifedi not being there and Willie Beavers being there instead?
No, I mean, again, I don't know. I don't know if anybody asked about Jermaine Ifedi because it was just one of those things where it's voluntary. But again, he's not in anywhere close to any kind of contract talk or anything else. Just might be a missed day. But I think what you're looking at with Beavers out there is because, you know, George Fant wasn't able to go because of his coming off the knee injury. So he wasn't able to go. So now all of a sudden you're down a couple tackles and now you have to maybe borrow a little bit from the guard position.
Wild card time on a Friday, John.
Time now for the wild card.
Wild card. Mr. Professor Clayton.
Yes.
It's time for Fan Fiction Friday.
Oh boy.
John Clayton is a zookeeper responsible for the reptile section of the zoo. One day, as he's tending to the eggs of a Komodo dragon, Clayton gets bit by one of the babies that hatches. The next morning, Clayton wakes up with the ability to sneeze fire, fearing that he will turn into an actual dragon, and worrying that allergy season will pose too great a threat to the reptiles he works with. Clayton seeks a controversial medical procedure at the hands of a mad scientist played by Boy Howdy. Will Clayton become a dragon, or will he hold off the change and avoid sneezing for the rest of his life? What do you think?
It depends on Dr. Boy Howdy. How good are you going to be able to do this? Because we're going to be going into the... you know, other than me being maybe a barbecuer, I get worried that if you can't get this fixed, I'm going to be cooking up a lot of things. And if I'm going to be laying in bed, I mean, that's going to be a really hot bed as me sneezing out all kind of fire.
That doesn't sound fun.
Now, this doesn't sound fun. I don't know. Do we have confidence in Dr. Howdy being able
would
to
you?
Do this right?
I don't have a ton.
I'm a little skeptical.
One thing I do know is that Dr. Howdy would have confidence in himself.
That's correct.
Yeah. He would be very... I mean, he's got a surgeon's arrogance to him.
They would come in there. I would trust Howdy. Like, if it came down to it, if you're like, I'm sneezing fire, I would definitely trust Howdy more than I would trust, say, Jim Moore.
That's true. I would trust Taylor, I think, in that situation. If I could find our guy Taylor, he seems like somebody who could help me.
Why, because of his dexterity with joysticks?
Yeah, it just seems like somebody who would understand the fire sneezing issue.
You know, it's funny. I have a friend who is a surgeon, and he believes they should have an annual surgeon's combine, much like they do at the NFL job.
Where they, like, do finger exercises
Correct,
and
because
stuff?
Because he's like, we should know what the physical measurements of the surgeons are. Would you like to cover a surgeon's combine, John?
No, I don't think so.
Put that on the health network.
It might
or something.
Be a little, yeah, exactly. Might be a little boring.
John,
now if they start to run and stuff like that, they may not be good.
That might be worse. John, we appreciate it. Have a great weekend. Enjoy your Memorial Day off. You have all the time in the world. Go for a run. Go for a jog. Go sit outside. Go do something fun.
It's
we'll talk to you on Tuesday.
Thanks.
All right, there you go. John Clayton with us every single day. Right at 7:15. His show will be at 10 o'clock, and then of course 4 o'clock every day with Dan and David Moore.
Talking to Bradley McDougal.
Yeah,
we get
that'll
the
be
inside
fun.
Scoop about where he's playing in the secondary.
That's important. And in fact, we'll do some more on that practice and what it means coming up in Blue 42 and at 8 o'clock as well, because there are a lot of interesting things to come out of it. Before we do so, it is the story of the day, not just on our station, but essentially everywhere. The words that maybe got away, or did they? It's next on Brock and Salk.
You're listening to Brock and Salk.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
He's an idiot, plain and simple. I mean, listen, you know, I respect the man because he's a human being. you know, first and foremost. But he's just being more divisive, which is not surprising. It is what it is. You know, but for him to say that anybody who doesn't follow his viewpoints or his constituents' viewpoints, you know, should be kicked out of the country. It's just, it's not very empathetic. It's not very American-like, actually, to me. It's not very patriotic. It's not what this this country was founded upon. So it's kind of ironic to me that the president of the United States is contradicting what our country is really built on.
That was Doug Baldwin speaking after practice yesterday and addressing the comments made by President Trump earlier in the morning, saying that anybody who did not stand for the anthem maybe shouldn't be living in the United States. Danny O'Neill is in for Brock today here on 710 ESPN Seattle. We are not going to spend the whole show on this, but I did want to spend a few minutes on it because that's what yesterday turned into. And it's shocking, Danny, for somebody like you and me, and we're Generation X folks, who really kind of came of age in the 1990s when the biggest knock on our generation was, they're too apathetic. Nobody cares. Nobody's into anything. Nobody cares about politics. Nobody is interested in what's going on in the world. And to see that now almost every practice, every session of the media with the Seahawks players, are half of it is about what's going on in the world instead of what's going on in the football field, for me, is still sort of a head-shaking, surprising moment. And I'm not criticizing it, nor am I celebrating it. It's more just an observation on, man, if you had asked me when I was in college in the 90s, would we ever see player after player asked about the president's comments and the president engaging in sports, I never would have believed it. Not in a million years.
I agree with you. I would. It surprises me. I also think we're living in a pretty important and turbulent time.
There's no doubt.
And sports, which oftentimes is this apolitical oasis, is affected by it. And it's affected by it because the people who are playing it are full, complete people with their feelings about the world around them, and they're speaking out about it, and we're then watching how the rest of the world reacts to that. I agree with everything Doug said after the insult.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with everything Doug said after calling the president of the United States an idiot. And I understand why Doug reacted that way, because it was an emotional, it was a visceral condemnation of someone he feels has condemned and thrown at him. I look at it from this. Doug has incredible potential as a future leader. And one of the things as a future leader that you need to evaluate is what is going to have the best impact. How can my words, because it's not just satisfying yourself of expressing your perspective. It's being influential. It's being swaying other people. It's about being effective, not about being as vociferous or as blunt as possible. And so from that regard, I think 5 years from now, Doug will look back on that as a moment that he learned from, because everybody's going to fixate on what he said to start, rather than the point that he made about America and its inclusiveness.
Yeah, I think we've, you know, that's sort of been a theme. And Doug is such an interesting character. And I think some of this conversation is about Doug, and some of it is about the NFL's policy that they came out with a couple of days ago. On the Doug front, yeah, I think you and I see that one pretty similarly. I mean, he's such a smart, interesting human being. He's complex. There are things about Doug that I can't stand, and there are things about Doug that I really love. And there are things he says that really tick me off, not just about politics, but about the team. I was really mad at the way he handled the Pete Carroll question the other day on with Bob Gross and Tom. I mean, he was given an opportunity to defend his coach and protect the team, rule number one, and I thought he passed on that and kind of, you know, gave a mealy mouth, like, yeah, sometimes I've heard it all too much, sometimes it's okay.
Yeah,
and
it's the same. I mean, he's adapted it in some ways.
Right. That's okay. I feel like he could have done better than that. I thought he could have, you know, given a full-throated defense of Pete Carroll, but he chose not to. Okay, fine. Doug's complicated. I don't agree with everything he does, and I love a lot of it. This felt a little more like pooping on the football in the Super Bowl. Like, yeah, Doug, you're what you do and what you say is important, but unfortunately the nuance gets lost in the big action or the big statement. And when the big action was in front of the entire Super Bowl crowd pooping on a football, all of the smart things about you kind of get left behind, because that's everybody's lasting image for a while. And unfortunately, when you start a lot of, as you just said, intelligent, well-reasoned comments with "the man's an idiot," yeah, you're speaking about the president of the United States. No matter how you feel, no matter what he has said, I think that really makes it a challenge. So those are our thoughts on Doug. To spin this thing forward, though, and I'll keep coming back to this. This is an NFL story, and this is a typical story about Roger Goodell, and one that we've talked about before, and their arrogance and decision making being unilateral and not with respect to the players' union that it works with or doesn't work with, as the case may be. And Doug Baldwin didn't kneel. You've managed now with this policy to tick off a guy in Doug Baldwin who didn't even kneel. Doug was not a part of this protest. I know that'll get lost in this because everyone will just assume he was part of it. He was not. Doug has never knelt during the national anthem. He was not part of this process. And yet, because the NFL acted unilaterally and without respect or even conversation or communication with the players' union, someone like Doug is going to be furious. And I don't blame him for being so. The NFL should not just be dictating policy in a collectively bargained situation like this.
What the NFL did, in my mind, is not going to be effective. Use that word to talk about Doug Baldwin. When you're discussing and debating things politically, what's being effective? That calling people names I don't think is effective.
Nope.
Ordering people on what to do. Is this going to successfully... The NFL owners, if I understand it correctly, their goal is to stop having...
Bad press.
Bad press about the demonstrations and actions players are taking during the national anthem.
Yes.
Is this action going to move them in that direction? I don't think it will.
I agree with you.
Because I think that you have entrenched opposition from people who were not previously demonstrating, like Doug Baldwin. Like, this is the chances that Doug Baldwin might not be on the field now and might be part of... I think we're going to see entire teams that don't take the field for the national anthem. I think that's going to happen.
Well, so yesterday, this, of course, blows into a whole thing. And Steve Kerr, who's a head coach of the Golden State Warriors and is very political himself, was asked about the NFL's decision. Oh, hold on. I got to actually...
I think it's just typical of the NFL. They're just playing to their fan base, and they're just basically trying to use the anthem as fake patriotism, nationalism, scaring people. It's idiotic, but that's how the NFL has handled their business.
So it's weird. A, I wish Steve Kerr would take a little more time. Actually calling timeouts or seeming to work during late in games where he's... Look, I love Steve Kerr. He's coach of the Golden State Warriors. How does he criticize the NFL for the way it handles it when the NBA has an actual prohibition requiring players to stand?
Easy answer. It was collectively bargained. Easy answer, Danny, because that's the first place a lot of people went, right? Steve Kerr, how dare you? The NBA has banned their players from kneeling during the anthem. How could you criticize the NFL? Easy answer. The NBA collectively bargained it. They worked with the players. They openly communicated with the players. Again, the issue is not the policy. I honestly believe that. I have no way of proving this, but I really do believe that if the NFL and the players had worked out the exact policy that ended up becoming law a couple days ago, law in the NFL, then everything would have been fine. And the players would have said, okay, that's the deal that we came up with. We all compromised. We all gave a little bit. But instead, when you try to tell that group what to do, they're like, you're not going to tell me what to do. Fine, you just made this thing worse.
One of the things that I've always... that this is kind of an accident, that there is no rule regarding behavior during the national anthem in the NFL's rule book. Like, that it's kind of a weird sort of accident that dates back to the fact players weren't always on the field. The fact that when they wanted to put the rule in, what they should have done is just said, okay, we want to put this rule in there. What will it take for you to agree to having this rule put in?
Yes.
Because it's very clear that the NBA is functioning just fine in terms of social activism, in spite of there being a rule requiring you to stand during the national
anthem. That's a really good point. And so I think that's all we'll say about it for now. I know certainly there's a lot of opinion and passion on this subject. You guys keep texting in on it. There's a lot of good ones coming in. 710-710. Powered by Coors Light. All right, let's do this. Let's get back to the actual on-field action, because there was a guy yesterday with a big bulky knee brace who was not practicing, and he's awfully darn important. I'm going to ask Danny about him in Coors Light's Blue 42 next. I'm Brock and Salk.
Here we go.
This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, G, U corner, half back, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Blue 42. Blue 42.
All right, Coors Light's Blue 42 here. It's Brock and Salk, but with Danny in for Brock today. Danny O'Neill, Danny Dave, and more. Hey, man.
Hi.
It's good to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
You know what
me.
We're going to do today at 9 o'clock? Open phone lines.
Are we going to have Roger in Tacoma?
Hopefully, if we're lucky.
I miss Roger in Tacoma.
Roger's the best. We've been doing this every Friday for the last couple of weeks, and it's been a lot of fun.
Phil the Skunk. Has anybody heard from Phil the Skunk in a while?
No, we miss Phil. Yeah, he's sort of the... He's disappeared on us. Sad. We're hoping he'll call in one of these days for open phone lines.
We'll start preparing
the big thing you've been wanting to say. We'll do that at 9 o'clock this morning. Some more takeaways from Seahawks practice coming up here in 15 minutes. Danny, let's start with question number one. Deion Jordan was not practicing yesterday. He's got a big old brace on his knee. How serious an issue is that?
Yeah, it's a huge question mark. You're talking about a player who has played one half of the past three seasons. Now, part of that is because of issues of substance abuse. He's past that. At least we believe that he's past that. But let's remember, the guy was banged up last year, and his knee was much dodgier than I think anyone expected or thought when Seattle brought him in. He also had a neck injury during the season. Yeah, this is a concern. It would be really, really heartbreaking if he gets through all of the personal difficulties that he's had and has his body kind of break down, because he's important to this team. They need a number two pass rusher, and right now, you've got sort of a poo-poo platter of selections of guys who have been high draft picks who haven't really panned out. Marcus Smith, Barkevious Mingo, Deion Jordan. Jordan's the most productive of those guys, and you saw in limited time last year how impactful he can be. So I'm going to be watching. Hopefully this is he's ready to go by training camp, but there are some red flags there regarding his health.
Agreed. Question number two. If he is their number two pass rushing option, number one, I assume, is Frank Clark in his new version of the Seahawks defensive line. He's entering the last year of his deal. He did not show up at training camp yesterday or at OTA yesterday. Are they going to re-sign Frank Clark?
I don't know.
Do they know?
If they do, they certainly haven't tipped their hand. I want to say this, that they've, like, it's not to the point where you'd say, oh, they haven't done it, and they usually would have now. Justin Britt, when he got his extension, which is one of the more recent ones, that was in training camp, like as training camp was getting going. It's too soon to say they haven't done it yet, but I think that's very much a question. And if I was the Seahawks, I'd really be wondering, because you've got to make sure that you've got a player that's going to stay as hungry and as productive after he gets paid. The Seahawks have been better than any team at this. How did the Seahawks get so good? They constantly extended guys early and were always right about the guys they extended. There wasn't a guy that they extended that got worse. That didn't happen, and that's really rare. I'm not saying Frank Clark's that guy, but I'd have some questions about the maturity level going forward.
Yeah, probably says something that they haven't extended him already. Yeah, that's a good point. Question number three. You started to ask a question with John, but I want your opinion on it, because the offensive line is always a focal point for everybody who worries about the Seahawks, for the Seahawks hand-wringers out there. What did you see in our first opportunity to take a look at this offensive line yesterday?
What I saw was Willie Beavers getting some time with the first unit offensive
line.
Who
is Willie Beavers?
Willie Beavers was a fourth-round pick, and I believe 2015, 2016. He's been in the league a couple years. He's on the practice squad last year, signed to a futures contract. It's jumped out to me because he's there at right tackle, which is, I think, where most people assume Jermaine Ifedi's going to be. Now, what does this mean going forward? That could be as simple as they want to give him a look at tackle to see if that's where his fit might be going forward. Or it could be to light a fire under Jermaine Ifedi. There's a number of different reasons. Ifedi was there. I saw him. He looks huge. He looks mammoth. I personally think that the development of Jermaine Ifedi could be the single biggest attribute. Like, it could be the single biggest difference maker on this offensive line. But I looked at myself, I was like, Willie Beavers, we're going to see a little more from him. We'll see. I think there's some uncertainty there at right tackle.
That's today's Coors Light's Blue 42. Unfortunately, George Fant, still not practicing either, and he's probably another candidate there at right tackle. So
I'd be surprised if George Fant ends up being a factor in this team.
Really?
Going forward. Yeah.
A guy that last year was their starting left tackle, you don't think he'll even make the team?
I think there's a question there. How he's coming back from injury, and I think that you also had, he was Tom Cable's starting left tackle.
Fair.
And it was Tom Cable's project. And is there enough potential in that? I think he'll make the team. I really have questions, and I hope I'm wrong. I really have questions. We'll ever see him be any impact.
Everything you just said makes sense. I still hope you're wrong also because I like George Fant.
I love George
Fant. This is 100% just a rooting interest in a guy and in a story, not about whether or not he could be great for the Seahawks. I don't know. I always thought he, you know, made a little bit more sense as a left tackle than a right tackle anyway, with, you know, sort of the size, speed thing, the way he looks. But I'm just rooting for George Fant. I want that to work. That's my guy. I noticed him at rookie camp a couple of years ago. I was like, dude, look at this dude. He stands out, and then he made the team, and then he was going to be the starter. Like, there were so many cool things about him and his story. I was so happy for him, and I really like the guy every time we've talked to him.
Can I put on my hindsight goggles for a second? 1 year ago, when he blew his knee out, I can't believe that I didn't make more of a big deal about, oh, it's not all that surprising that a guy who added 25 pounds of muscle in the offseason and hasn't played all that much football, his knee wasn't able to hold up all that weight.
Those guys need to, I was commenting on this the other day, and I know you get annoyed with the body image show stuff, but Bobby Wagner has gigantic knees. He really does. It was all I could think about when we were sitting there with him the other day in that little room over at the Seahawks. I was like, this guy's knees are huge. His knees are like bigger than my head. And as I'm looking, I was like, well, that you probably need knees like that in order to hold up with all the lifting and everything else that those guys do.
Do you want to know one of my favorite things that annoys Wyman?
What?
And he hates it, is when I talk about, like, with Red Bryant sprained an ankle, it's going to be tougher for him because he's so much bigger. And, like, Wyman's just like, but his ankles are proportionally big enough to support his
Bobby's
weight.
Knees are improportionally large. They're gigantic. It was, like, amazing. And not in a gross way, just in a really cool way. All right. That is one weird and too in-depth observation. But Danny and I have a ton of them from the camp yesterday. It was really great to see the Seahawks out and actually practicing. We'll tell you what was going on. Coming up, don't go anywhere. It's Brock and Salk.